Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today, we're visiting with Mr. Jack Carlson, a designer, archaeologist, author, and former U.S. team athlete. He's the founder and creative director of the acclaimed New York-based clothing brand, Rowing Blazers. And Mr. Carlson, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're more than welcome, and thanks for your time. So tell us, from an archaeologist, a world championship rower, author, and now a successful entrepreneur, what's the common thread amongst all of your achievements so far?
Well, I have pretty eclectic interests. You know, this whole project of Rowing Blazers as a brand, it started as a book called Rowing Blazers, which brought together many of my different interests. It brought together, of course, the sport of rowing, which I've been passionate about and involved in for a long time. It brought together an interest in clothing and menswear, and also an interest in history and in the past, and in a way, in archaeology. You know, archaeology is the study of material culture, and clothing is part of that. You know, so I collect vintage clothes. A lot of what I do with the brand Rowing Blazers is inspired by vintage clothing. And in a way, that's archaeology too. It's not the same as the archaeology I used to do when I was excavating temples in Italy, but it's a study of material culture from the past and looking at material objects and how humans created them and interacted with them. It's just a lot more recent when you're looking at, you know, a rugby shirt that was made, you know, in the 1890s, or a jacket that was made in the 1990s. But that's kind of archaeology too. And I'd like to think that that is sort of a common thread that runs through a lot of what I do. And Rowing Blazers as a brand, it's kind of the manifestation of the coming together of all these different interests, if that makes sense.
It certainly does, and you're tying it all together, and it's showing who you are as well. I've been on the site, Rowing Blazers. It's quite phenomenal and really intriguing as well. Now, when you wrote the book, Rowing Blazers, did you ever imagine that it would lead to building an acclaimed clothing brand?
No, I didn't at the time. I mean, it was really a passion project. It was a side project. You know, I first had the idea for this book, which I thought was going to be very niche. Back when I was in high school, I was competing in an event called Henley Royal Regatta in England, which is kind of the equivalent of Wimbledon for rowing. It's a very traditional, very old school event. And it has this tradition at Henley that all the competitors, when you're not racing and you're in the kind of the enclosure, they call it, the spectator area, everyone wears their club blazer. And if you come from an American rowing program and go over there, you have to have blazers made for your team or for your club. And this is a big tradition there. And I met so many athletes and students from all over the world when I was competing there back when I was in high school. And I heard the stories and the crazy traditions and myths and rituals that they have in their rowing clubs related to the blazer, you know. Kids from the Netherlands, from Australia, from Italy, from Argentina, from Hong Kong, from all over the place. And some of them had some really cool and crazy stories. In one rowing club, they cut down the curtains from the medieval dining hall of the school and make a blazer out of that if you win certain races. In some clubs in the Netherlands, they pass the blazers down from one generation of rowers to, you know, the next new kid coming up and joining the club. When one rower retires, they give their blazer to the new kids. And some of these blazers that they're walking around wearing are 100 years old, and they have all sorts of rules about you can't wash it. So there'll be guys at this very elite, prestigious rowing event from the Netherlands walking around wearing these jackets that are, you know, 80, 100 years old and have never been washed and are involved in all kinds of parties and banquets. And they are just stained and soaked with generations of, you know, spilled beer and river water and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I thought to myself then, So I want you to write a book about all these different traditions. It's almost kind of a work of anthropology in a way, all the traditions at all these rowing clubs related to the blazer. And it kind of uses the blazer as a way of talking about the history and traditions at these clubs in general. And fast forward, I guess like 7 or 8 years later, I was in grad school. I had been on the national team a couple times, and I had good friends who were rowers all over the world. And I thought, okay, maybe I should be the guy to do this. And it was a side project, like I said, while I was working on Roman archaeology and Chinese archaeology, and while I was also starting to compete on the national team. And I never imagined it would take off the way it did. And when the book came out in 2014, I thought it was really a niche thing for the rowing community. Again, it's a book called Rowing Blazers. You can't get more niche than that. But it ended up, I don't know, kind of being, it was good timing. It was part of the zeitgeist. That kind of style, that interest in menswear was big at that moment in time. And the book took off in the menswear community. Ralph Lauren picked up the book, and I ended up meeting Mr. Lauren and meeting Jerry Lauren, who's Ralph's brother, and David Lauren, who's his son. And they were extremely excited and supportive for the book. And they hosted a series of launch events for the book at the different Ralph Lauren flagships around the world. And it got a tremendous amount of press. Like fashion press that I never would have imagined, you know, me or my work being in Vanity Fair or Vogue or Esquire or whatever. But it really resonated with people, and it gave me the idea of actually starting my own brand, basically. It was my first taste of that industry. And that's what kind of planted the seeds for what, you know, became Rowing Blazers, the brand.
I got to tell you, that's some incredible and inspiring information right there in details. That is phenomenal. Using that word again, because it's just the best way to describe it. Now, what was one of the biggest challenges when starting Rowing Blazers? Talk to us about that.
Man, you know, it's hard to pick one. Just as one that's not very specific, but as a general theme, you know, just I didn't know what the heck I was doing in the apparel industry or the fashion industry. I was a total outsider, and you know, I needed some real help, and I was very fortunate to find that help in my business partner, a guy named David Rosenzweig, who is about my dad's age. It's very unusual, I think, actually, to have a company with two founders that are from, you know, different generations. David is a veteran of the apparel industry, and he, you know, more than made up for what I was lacking. You know, as on a kind of different level, a more kind of in the weeds level, talking about challenges. The biggest thing to me, actually, it's not any one thing in particular, but it's just how in this industry, every single day, there will be things that blindside you. You know, there will be some unexpected issue that you could have never even imagined there could be an issue with X, Y, or Z. And then there it's staring you in the face. You know, it's like, what's that quote that's like, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face? That's like every day in this industry. And so every day you'll have some amazing high highs, some big wins, but you'll also have some random guy calling you up explaining that your corduroy has been seized in customs because there was a change in some law somewhere about the way that the tariffs work for corduroy that's X percent cotton coming from certain territories, and someone didn't fill out a form properly on the other end. And you're just like, I woke up, I had no idea that was even could ever be a thing, let alone that I would be dealing with it by 11 o'clock in the morning. And there's just something like that that can blindside you every day. And, you know, you just have to try to be as prepared as you can. And you just have to be very nimble and good at rolling with the punches and try to keep a good attitude no matter what gets thrown your way. But that's certainly, you know, those are two types of challenges on two different levels. There's the kind of just general theme, and luckily I have some good people around me, including David, but it's my lack of, you know, experience before diving in and doing this. And then it's also just those little things that can just, you know, come at you out of nowhere almost every single day.
Those examples right there are real life and real world examples, and really do appreciate your sharing that from a personal perspective. Today we're joined by Mr. Jack Carlson, a designer, archaeologist, author, and former U.S. team athlete. He's the founder and creative director of the acclaimed New York-based clothing brand Rowing Blazers, and he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of VPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, looking ahead, how do you see Rowing Blazers and fashion evolving over the next, say, 5 to 10 years from now?
You know, with Rowing Blazers as a brand, I don't really think of it actually as fashion with a capital F, but I do think that we are doing some unusual things in this industry that, you know, I think are in some ways a little ahead of the curve and will inform the way this industry starts to move over the next few years. And, you know, to give a few examples of that, I am not a big believer in big seasonal collections. The way this industry has traditionally worked is in big seasonal collections that they come out often way ahead of the actual season that they're meant for. They go into a bunch of stores, the big department stores or online multi-brand retailers at full price. They gradually get marked down over the course of the season. At the end of the season, whatever's left over can go on clearance or can go into outlet stores, and then we get ready for the next big seasonal collection. And we don't really operate that way. Yes, we will come out on a seasonal basis, often in season, with you know, with more robust sort of offering of new products. But the way I much more prefer to work is actually on the two other ends of the spectrum. Like, if you think seasonal collections is kind of in the middle of the spectrum, it's not something that's evergreen. And it's also not like a quick hit thing. It's in the middle. I prefer the two extremes of the spectrum. I prefer product that is evergreen, seasonless, that is core, however you want to describe it, and that you can have and the customer can rely on you having. And there are a lot of great brands that their whole model is just that. You know, you go to Sperry Topsider, a brand that we, you know, collaborate with, they're always going to have the brown AO boat shoe, always. And they, you can count on that. There are some brands that just, they only have that type of product. You know, I think that's important for us to always have. For us, it's like the rugby shirt, the blazer, certain accessories that are evergreen. And then the other end of the spectrum, which is much more informed by streetwear, which is to have smaller capsules. Sometimes they're collaborations with other brands. Sometimes they're just our own capsules. And they might, you know, they might sell out very quickly. They might be around for a month or a couple of months, but they're not something that's designed to be around forever. They're not something that's designed to be around even for a whole season and where we've overproduced it. But it's something that we think is cool. It might have a more limited appeal, or it might turn out, and sometimes we surprise ourselves, wow, there's a huge amount of demand for it, and people are buying, you know, people who got it are selling it at a huge markup on eBay. That's what happened, for example, with our collaboration with Seiko watches that we did, with our collaboration with Barber Jackets, two great heritage brands that we're super fortunate to collaborate with. But this model, including doing collaborations, but whether it's a collaboration or not, is really coming out of the world of streetwear. And I don't consider ourselves to be a streetwear brand like Supreme, but I do think it's an exciting and interesting way of doing business and releasing new product. And to me, it's a hell of a lot more exciting than, oh, we came out with this whole huge new collection. It's going to end up eventually in some outlet store somewhere. Oh, it's really cool that it's like, hey, we're coming out with these watches in collaboration with Seiko. We only made 500 of them. And it's a special thing. And if you are able to get it, it means something to you. And there's a story there. And you were paying attention and you were a little bit ahead of the game, so you were able to get one. I think there's some there's some fun and excitement to that. And I think, you know, I think the whole industry is moving a little bit away from that old school model of doing things and a little more towards the way that, that we do things. Not that we invented that way of doing things, but, you know, I think we are one of the few brands that has both ends of those spectrums, though. A lot of brands have two out of the three, you know, and they're often one side in the middle or the other side in the middle. We have the two ends. We have the core rugby shirts and blazers and so on that's year-round, and then we have these collaborations that is a little bit more, to me, that's like the icing on the cake, or that's the spice on top of, you know, the dish, whatever the right metaphor is.
Well, we certainly have enjoyed your time spent with us here today. I am sure you've inspired someone tuning in, no doubt about that. And it has been a joy to hear how you've grown Rowing Blazers and your perspective looking ahead, say 5 to 10 years from now as well. Lastly, I'm sure listeners want to hear from you in this regard. What's one piece of advice you would give to someone who is looking to start their own venture?
You know, I think it's kind of a cliche, but I think one of the best pieces of advice I can be is, or that I can give is, you know, there's no playbook, so don't look for one. You know, there's no rule book. There's no set of steps that you have to go through. You know, it's better to kind of blaze your own trail. And I think the more you're kind of looking around you and looking at what are these other brands doing, the less creative you're going to be. And the more you're going to get kind of sucked into doing something that already exists. You know, the world doesn't need another version of some brand that already exists out there. You know, and I think in some ways it's been a great advantage. I talked about earlier what a challenge it is coming into this industry, not knowing very much about how it works on the inside. But in other ways, that's been a big advantage to me. You know, especially when we were starting out, I would get told no all the time. Well, I say, well, why not? Well, that's just not the way you do it. You know, and that was always great. Every time I would be told no, to me, that was like a sign we were doing something good because we were doing something different. And if you're not doing something different, really kind of, you might as well go work for another company that already exists out there rather than starting your own thing. That's the best kind of, it's kind of a cliche, but that's the best advice I could give.
Well, we'll certainly take off and run with that advice. Thanks so much, Mr. Carlson. Where can listeners get all the details on yourself as well as Rowing Blazers online?
You know, rowingblazers.com is our website. The book is available on there. I think it's on Amazon and wherever else, you know, you buy your books as well. We're on Instagram at Rowing Blazers. I'm on Instagram at Jack Carlson. And Eric, I really appreciate your time.
And I appreciate yours as well. Again, listeners, it is rowingblazers.com. Mr. Carlson, all the best. And thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you.
Anytime. We've been speaking with Mr. Jack Carlson, a designer, archaeologist, author, and former U.S. team athlete. He's the founder and creative director of the acclaimed New York-based clothing brand Rowing Blazers. And for all the details, visit rowingblazers.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7. Around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.